everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly on a frequency of 146.835 MHz, the 2-meter repeater of the Venture Crew 7373 Amateur Radio Club, located in Pearl River, New York. The repeater covers northern New Jersey, southeastern Connecticut, New York, and southwestern Connecticut. Got some directional issues today, don't I? Hi. Anyway, the PL is 151.4 if it's on, although it might be carrier access. And further, the offset is minus 600 kilohertz. This net is a little different than other nets in that it's a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, the arts of operating and exploring our hobby, and also how we serve others with our wonderful hobby and our tools and toys. It's also an opportunity to share your share lists, your for sale wanted and for sale swap and wanted items. You're welcome to do that as well. And let's see, what else can I offer you? One other thing is that we do have a supporting email group. It's a Yahoo group, but it's a closed Yahoo group. So it's spam-free, which is a good thing. And that is comtechgroup@yahoogroups.com. So Charlie Oscar Mike, Tango Echo Charlie Hotel, Golf Romeo Oscar Uniform Papa Comtech Group at yahoogroups.com. You're welcome to use that as well. And to keep the conversation going, send along electronic resources and the like. So with no further ado, stations whose call signs begin with the letter Whiskey, please call K2BAR.
WA2ISC, Bob here, and short comment.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, WA2ISC. For what it's worth, I posted about our hamfest on eham.com for.
Oh, thank you, Bob. That's great. That is super. Yes, the hamfest is going to be the second Saturday in October. So a week from this Saturday is the Barra Hamfest. It will be at the Westwood High School, located in Washington Township in beautiful Bergen County, New Jersey. We hope you will attend. There's one other thing. We do have a supporting access via Echolink. And so when I do ask for check-ins, the Echolink stations, please stand by. I will get to you last, but I will get to you, I promise. For those who care or need access to Echolink, it's Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Kilo Delta dash Lima, KD2BKD dash Lima. And you can get in from there as well. Alrighty, any other whiskeys?
Whiskey Alpha 2, Delta Whiskey Bravo, Bill Dumont.
WA2DWB, good evening, Bill. You've been rather chatty lately, another fora. Good evening. Alrighty, any other whiskeys? Alrighty, how about those Novembers? Alright, Kilos.
K2BAR. This is KD2BKD, Bob in Park Ridge, just listening.
K2BIR, Howie in Tarrytown, coming.
Okay, so I have KD2BKD, Bob, very good, and I have Howie K2EIR, and Howie has a comment. So I've noted that, thank you very much. We'll get to that in a moment. Any other Kilos? Alrighty. How about the Alpha stations? Alrighty. Boy, is another quiet net. Well, maybe. We'll see. See how noisy we all can make it. Alright. Echolink. Anybody on Echolink?
Good evening. This is Jim, WE2UMP. In Hamburg, New Jersey, and no traffic tonight.
EchoLink. Anybody else on EchoLink?
YRA, Stephen Suffering, no traffic.
Good evening, Steve. Welcome aboard. All right, any other stations on EchoLink? Okay, nothing heard. Any other stations on direct, on the repeater? Okay, well, let's get to it. We do have some announcements and such, but we'll hold those for now. Howie, let's go with your comment. K2EIR, good to hear you from W2TTT. K2BAR.
This is K2EIR. Good to be here, Gordon. Thank you. I know I haven't been here for a long time. Okay, the comment simply is this. I posted to the contact group that I think generate some email about the ARRL division election by tonight, and I'm not finished, so good to get you all on. WTTT from K2EIR.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Alrighty, very good, yep. So your comments, I understand that Rhea is going to be visiting the Crystal Radio Club, or has, I'm not sure which, and then, of course, from N2YBB is going to be visiting the WECA group, not too distant future. I think that's on the 9th. He's also, going to be meeting Barra this Sunday at the Barra meeting. Rhea was at the Barra meeting last month. And so that is something to consider. It's probably the worst kept secret, but for the reasons I have stated and a few that and a whole lot that I didn't, because I wanted to, just make the basic point. I've endorsed N2YBB to continue as ARRL Hudson Division Director, and I think that's something that's worthy to consider. Hopefully it'll make you consider for him, but it is what it is. But in any case, just thought you'd like to know that's in fact the case, but it's important to hear out everybody and the like. If anyone wishes to have a continuing dialogue on that subject, I think we could take it elsewhere, but I don't want to turn this into a political thing. But I think overall, for the best, what's best for amateur radio, that would be what comes to mind. At least in my humble opinion. Let's see. This weekend is also the simulated emergency test. And there's an email out about that. And I don't know if you've seen that, but if you haven't, you're welcome to participate. It's pretty low key, but you can participate on your terms pretty easily at set times. It's quick in and out, and we'd love to have you participate one or more times as your schedule allows. The other aspect of that is that preceding that, the scheduling of that, we had a video surveillance, kind of amateur radio activity scheduled for the courthouse square in Patterson on Saturday. So, as a consequence, the SCT exercise will be actually a joint SCT with Ali and RI taking turns on various nets on both FM and DMR. We'll be operating on this repeater for one net session, and 30 minutes later, I think we'll be doing a DMR session on NJ2PC, and 30 minutes after that, we'll do something on UHF-FM on WO2X in Montclair, and then a few hours later, we'll repeat that cycle with a different activity, and then there'll be an opportunity to send in some MT-63 stuff on either Saturday or Sunday, if you want to do that. But if you also would like to support, or just come down to the courthouse and just see what we'd set up in the way of mesh networks and the like, you're welcome to do so. I think that would be fun as well. So, I've kind of given my announcements and answered Howie's basic question, or Howie's basic announcement. Anything on this or other topics? Or these or other topics? Howie, did you want to add anything more?
Yeah, I'll add in this other topic. I have to pass an article about
a little strong egg fry on your signal, and the exact topic didn't register in my head because of that. What is your what did you post a message on?
Well, I didn't post it. I just came across an article on folded counterpoints, FCP. By the way, tell me the frequency, because maybe I'm off 5 kilohertz or something like that.
Well, that was a little bit better. 146.835.
Yeah, that's what I'm transmitting on. Let me move up to higher power. Okay, this is higher power. Any better?
A little bit, yes.
Okay, well, a little bit. I don't know what's causing it. I'll have to take some time to monitor my own transmitting system. Anyway, I am here, K2EIR.
So why don't you tell us what you were going to tell us?
Okay, happy to. So, the folded, first of all, sort of in the background, why this intrigued me is if you go to my QRZ page, you know I've still have available a shortened 40-meter dipole. I used on field day in 2012. For that, based on a QST article. And basically the way the 40-meter dipole is shortened is by using a length of window line. What you do is basically the conductor is going up one side of the window line, coming back on the other side of the window line, then you punch holes, or you just use the windows to run a third conductor, or continue the conductor, if you will, out to the other end. So on the 40-meter version, each leg has about 12.5 feet of window line prepared in the way I just indicated, and another 10 or 12 feet of plain wire. So it's basically linear loaded, and you do that on each leg of the dipole. Now the folded counterpoise does something just like it, but they're separating it by 4 inches. They're elevating this by up to 8 feet, and when they come back, basically they're using, I think, a quarter wavelength, and what they do is, instead of completing a whole third turn, they come halfway. So in effect, if you attach that to, say, the shield of your coax, that's your counterpoise to an inverted L on 160, and which is also, I think, that's about 120 feet, so I guess that's a quarter wave on 160. And as they say, basically, when you've got these three conductors, but you take the conductor, the last part of it, at midway. So, for example, if I was to do this for 80 meters, I'd have 33 feet of window line and at 16 and a half feet, I tap into that third conductor to go to my shield, and that presumably this makes a good counterpoise and is most efficient. But you have to feed it, now this is what this article says, you have to feed it with a, with an isolation transformer, and Ballon Designs makes one just for this, also with the designation FCP. So have I confused everyone? K2EIR.
No, but I am looking at your QRZ page, K2EIR from K2BAR. Certainly interesting. I'm actually going to open up the QST article link that I think you have put here. So K4VX linearly loaded dipole. So I'm trying to play catch up a little bit here, but very interesting the way you did this. So basically you used 11 feet 10 inches of wire folded back on itself to go back to the center insulator, and then a 22-foot extension after that to make things happy. That's pretty good. So the overall length of this thing is essentially 45 feet or so. Not bad. Not bad at all. 46 feet. I'm just reading here in real time. That's pretty cool. So if you go to Howie's QRZ page, he has a link to an article, and the page is pretty self-explanatory. Just now that I'm looking at it and have a chance to figure this out, electrically, are there any major departures from your design versus what's in the article?
Not much from that article, but again, what I was bringing up was the folded counterpoise. It's sort of very similar, and I'm thinking of doing it with window line rather than a 4-inch separation. I suggest you try to Google. Sorry, I don't have a computer here near the rig. I wasn't intending to bring this up tonight, otherwise I would have prepared, but see if you can find anything for folded counterpoise in a Google search, and I know there are somewhere a webpage on it by K2. Oh, that's what you should go to. K2AV. He's the one who sort of presented it. Kilowatt 2 Alpha Victor, and you can see how it's deployed as a counterpoise.
Yeah, I certainly have found it. Hilarious. I got a security warning because I'm using my work computer. But yeah, there's something in there too on that. Kilo 2 Alpha Victor folded counterpoise project. So yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Alrighty, interesting. Anybody else have any thoughts?
KJ4BJK disconnected. N2OEL disconnected.
Mind, get away with running this thing scaled up for a legal limit power level. So Howie, what would you think?
Well, here's what I'm hoping to do with this. I check into Eastern New York Racy's net on 75 meters. They run the net every other month on 75 and alternate months on 440 link repeaters. So really need to get up into the Albany area. And I've used some other antennas. And what I'm hoping to do, where it all comes up, is make myself a folded counterpoise for 75 meters and just leave it what I would call, I'd call it a floppy folded counterpoise, and just let the window line curl up because to some extent it's going to overlap on my very small deck, and use some sort of vertical on 75. You know, it could be a slinky, it could be, you know, I haven't figured that out, but I want something that won't cause, you know, the condo people to say, oh, you have an enormously tall thing on your deck. So that's what I'm thinking, some sort of vertical with this counterpoise.
Yeah, so let me ask a different question. Have you thought of using a telescoping, like crappie pole or something like that, with the wire tethered to the end of it, let's say to the top section, and then just collapse all the sections except for the top section and the one that supports it, because you can have wire parallel to it. Why don't you just use that? And that way, when you're done, you can just, you know, literally pull it down, and you know, it'll be fairly, you know, if you use the right kind of wire, it won't be much of a snag problem. That might be something to consider. And that way you don't have this thing hanging 20 feet in the air. You have something that's standing maybe 5-6 feet in the air.
Okay, every time I've tried to imagine how to attach the wire and then collapsing the telescoping pole, I think that the attachment is going to get in the way. But what are you saying? Use tie wrap, use ties at the top of each section.
I would take a 16-foot crappie pole, and I would take a length of wire, parallel it to the very top, if you will, inside section, which is extended. Put heat shrink down about a foot or so long of that along it. Heat shrink it, the wire, to that little skinny section. Now that skinny center section will never collapse into the other sections anymore. So if you have a basic height of, let's say, 3-4 feet, I think it's 4 feet for a crappie pole, you're going to have an 8-foot pole when it's collapsed or something just under 8 feet, maybe 7, okay? So that top skinny section will never go all the way in. But when you're ready to, you just pull out, you grab the section that has the wire and the skinny section and the heat shrink tubing, and give it a yank, and just keep pushing it up to extend the wire up when you want it, and when you're done, you just pull it back down. It's no big deal.
Okay, well, that's a thought. I might try that. Yeah, besides the folded counterpoise, I also was just thinking of a vertical that was an off-center fed, but of course it wouldn't be terribly long, you know, high, even vertical, although I have a 28-foot telescopic mast here as well. you know, I have to decide how much risk I'm willing to take. But there are ways. I'm just wondering which antenna might perform better. And the way to find out, of course, is to try them again and again. Thanks, Gordon, K2EIR.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea. I mean, and for any folded, or not folded, any kind of collapsing thing, I mean, a 16-foot crappie pole, if you're not going to leave it out an extended day in and day out, day in and day out, you know, for like years, it's not a big deal. And if it does, the crappie pole costs you, what, $15 to get another one. It's not the end of the world. And if the crappie pole starts to disintegrate or what, doesn't want to stay up anymore, when you extend it, go buy another one, slit the heat shrink tubing, do it again. I mean, I've got two crappie poles I've been keeping in reserve for a project, and I just wasn't sure what that project's going to be, and I think I now know what it's going to be. I think in my case, I have a little more space, but I'm thinking about it. Anybody have any thoughts on this? Or on, should we say, shortened antennas or collapsible antennas for either portable use or, shall we say, intermittent use, where you don't want to have something hanging out for everybody to complain about day in and day out, but only when you use it. Anybody have any thoughts?
Yeah, K2BAR in the group, K2YRA. I'm a big fan of crappie poles. What always happens when I have it set up somewhere in a park, someone comes by and says, how's the fishing? Or if I'm near the water, they say, what do you get? traffic, so I'm going to make a little sign. Yes, it's a fishing pole, but no, I am not fishing for fish. Howie, what I really liked in one of the pictures in your QRZ page was using a cutting board as the mounting for to go from the pole to the elements. That's pretty good because it's nice and sturdy and RF neutral. And also, I'm looking back in the June 2011 article about those military poles. I got about, I don't know, 50, 60 feet of them, maybe more, sitting in the living room, and I want to get out and use them more often out in the field. But that's my fishing story. Back to Net K2IRA.
Yeah, I will point out. I will point out that he also mentions the military surplus mass, and but more importantly, the tripod fixture from Barans, B-A-R-A-N-S. They're $50. They come in all kinds of colors, and if you're for military poles, especially the aluminum ones, because the plastic ones won't fit up the center. But if you have aluminum military poles, they are just delightful to have. That is a wonderful fixture to have. I have one, and I've been tempted to get another one just because I don't know how long they'll be making them for, but what a great fixture that is. It really is. It's a chunk of welded aluminum that's pretty impressive. Anyway, winter's coming, and I'm kind of curious what kinds of especially HF radio antennas. We're talking about 40 and 75 here. But what other antennas have we considered, and what kinds of operations we want to do as we roll into the winter?
WA2UMP with a comment.
Jim, go right ahead. WA2UMP, K2BAR.
I recently put up a 40-80 meter dipole and found that it was okay on 40 and 80. It needs to be pruned a little for 80 to be more precise, but it didn't work on 160, so I came up with a simple solution. It's not rocket science. What I did was I shorted the inner conductor to the outer shield to use it as a long wire T. And my LBG tuner for my ICOM 7000 still wouldn't tune it on 160 as a long wire. So for $64, I bought a inexpensive MFJ random wire tuner. It was the MFJ 16010. And let me let it drop a second.
Go ahead, Jim.
It looks like I dropped out there for a second. I'm trying not to be too long-winded like last week. I cascaded the random wire tuner with the auto tuner, and I got a one-to-one on all parts of the band, so was able to successfully use the 80-40 meter dipole as a 160 meter antenna. And it worked decently. A compromised antenna, of course, but allows me to get out on the top band, all for a $64 investment. Back to the control.
Connected. KJ4PJK.
Very, very nice. Very nice. Okay. Yeah, sometimes the little crappy tuner is all you need. It's kind of funny. They're also set up differently. The LDG tuner is set up for, you know, essentially a counterpoise-driven, you know, dipole type of antenna, or vertical with a ground plane, whereas, the MFJ is meant to tune a wire, just any old wire, so that's important to consider as well. Alrighty, so I have the Kilo to Alpha Victor folded counterpoise article here. It's easily found on either Bing or Google. I've tried it on both. And he used open wire line, which I think is fascinating. I have used the 4-inch and change electric fence insulators, and they work pretty well as well, but that's another thing to think about. I also like the way he tunes it. He tunes the end of the antenna by twisting the wires more and more together to shorten it or untwist them to lengthen it. That's pretty clever, actually, in its own little way. Anybody else have any thoughts or techniques on this topic?
KJ4PJK, disconnected.
NJ2BS, repeat.
I guess we missed AJ4PJK. He never checked in. Oh well. I also heard N2OEL before the other net, or between nets. I wasn't sure why he didn't participate, be connected and disconnected. Alrighty. Let's see. So, anybody have any interesting antenna plans or activity plans or aspirations for the next couple of weeks related to this topic or things similar?
Gordon, WA2DWB. Have to check out. Got to go pick somebody up.
Yeah, I know. Driving Miss Daisy, are you?
That we are.
It's a beautiful thing, Bill. We've reached a stage in life where that's actually the highlight of our day, isn't it?
That and this.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you very much. I'll just say this. Say hi to Doretta for me. And, you know, I kid you not, but I'm as happy picking up my wife at 60 as I was at 25. Maybe even happier. Anyway, it's all good. W2TTT, 73, Bill.
73.
All right. Anybody else have anything? All righty. Well, Howie and Jim, this is great. Howie, did you want to add anything more?
Yeah, actually I do. But it's food for thought later. And it's admitted it's an inadequacy of my own. This thing, the folded counterpoint, as I said, has a special isolation transformer made by Ballard Design. In other words, it looks like a ballon, but, you know, there's two separate windings, and so it's the transformer. Which he says is absolutely necessary. I burn up a regular ballon. And, you know, I've been dealing with common mode noise, trying to reduce that. So I've been doing more, and I thank people on this net for telling me about toroids. I'd like to know a lot more about toroids than I know, and all the different mixes and metals and everything. I think there's not enough material in one place to make it simple and give one a comprehensive view of how this stuff works, but I think it really makes a big difference in ham radio compared to years ago. There's a lot of stuff you accomplish with this, so I just throw that out, toroids and ferrites as a topic, K2EIR.
Well, I'll give you one little bit of advice. In general, if you can break the DC path and still make the RF that you want flow, it is amazing how effective that can be as a technique for reducing the ingress of noise into a receiver. I'll give you an example. We have several devices that are not filters. People call them filters. But there's absolutely no filtering going on whatsoever. And we have them plugged into, or we can plug them into, let's say, a digital gateway. And our digital gateway is for DSL or video, VDSL, which is the higher speed version, and which goes up to 100 megabits or so, maybe more. And What we do is we break the DC path. So we break the DC path on the twisted pair coming in. We break the DC path on the coax going out to the set-top boxes, if it's a wired set-top box, or the Ethernet interface. We break the DC path on the Ethernet interfaces, and we break the path on the POTS line going to the tip and ring for the analog telephone adapter for the voice over IP interface. So by breaking that DC path, I cannot emphasize how much noise reduction you will get. In our case, we get less into our system overall, and it makes the performance of the whole system better for the customer. But the same thing would go in your shack. So if you can break that DC path going in and out of your radio and still get the RF that you need in, the control signals in and out, blah, 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 you will be a happy, happy guy.
Okay, well, the next thing I need is, tried and true combinations of toroid and windings to do that.
Right, and by the way, I don't have them here, but I can look up some of those component names, because they're made by standard vendors, so if you want to calm down your home network or this or that, it's certainly doable. Reduce that radiated emission stuff. We can certainly do that, and it's a worthwhile activity to engage in. Anybody else?
Question?
Go ahead, question.
W2SE, which noise are you talking about, Gordon?
We're talking about conducted emissions, mostly.
Okay, you're talking about man-made noise from local sources, or noise coming, RF coming back from unbalanced antennas, or what?
The former, mostly, meaning that, you have switch mode power supplies in the area and all kinds of other nonsense that are just screaming away, and the wire is emanating from your radio. All of them have the propensity for acting as antenna and bringing noise into the system. So if you can remove that, it actually works pretty darn well to lower the noise floor a bit.
That doesn't follow in my mode of thinking, but first thing to do is get away from vertically oriented antennas, because most man-made noise is vertical. So going horizontal is a good first step. Second thing is go after the noise at the source and just put chokes on it. Type 31 seems to work the best for HF bands.
All of that's good. Good advice. I mean, it's not a single dimension. But we have found that if we can get the noise out of the computers or from the computers from getting into other goodies, then we're in good shape. We really are. That helps reduce the amount of radiated emissions coming out of things and the radiated emissions picked up by things that get into the system. It's, as I say, it's pernicious and it's nasty.
The other thing is go to an antenna with some kind of directionality. Magnetic loops are interesting for either avoiding or locating man-made noise sources, because they're basically fairly tight and bi-directional. So you spin them around, you can locate your noise sources, or at least assist in locating it. Type 31, whether it's clamp-ons, ring toroids, whatever, is good for things like USB cables. Don't overlook AC power lines, they radiate just as much. I've got a switch mode power supply going to a battery here, and it makes noise when it's running. I wrap the DC cord coming out of the switcher. Actually, it's coming out of the battery is on charge. I wrap the cord coming out of the battery, which is basically, think of it like zip cord. Put about a dozen turns around a Type 31 FT-140 sized ring. Works like a champ. No more noise, gone completely.
Are you wrapping around that, around the DC side or the AC side?
I went after it on the DC side coming into the radio.
Okay, so let me explain something. I'm totally in agreement. This is good. So what we found experimentally years ago was that the power supply itself wasn't much of a problem. I mean, it wasn't that, I mean, it could be, but it, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, it is what it is. But it gets much worse when you add not just a cable on the DC side, but you start sucking current off that DC side. And the interesting thing was that the emission was coming from the AC side. That's where it was strongest. So the DC side was essentially the counterpoise that allowed the AC side to radiate. So, by introducing the choke on the DC side, you've denied you've denied the circuit the other half of its dipole, i.e., its counterpoise, through the insertion of that Type 31 choke, and you're good to go. Now, I do have a question for you. You ran, what you said, 9 or 10 turns of the DC cord through how big a Type 31 donut?
Okay, W2SC. Just to be clear, I've got 110 volts coming out of the wall, feeding into a brick, coming out of the brick, takes a DC line, feeds into a battery, a lithium ion phosphate battery. Coming out of the battery, which is common with the power supply, is a DC cable going to a radio. And the wire going to the radio is essentially a zip cord type wire. I don't know if that's important, but, you know, but it's skinnier. It's probably 20-ish or 18 gauge, I think. Let me let it drop. Okay, and I took that nice long length of wire. I was thinking about shortening it, but I'm not getting that much drop on the current that I'm drawing. But I wrapped about a dozen turns around an FT-140-31 round ferrite core. And that killed the noise completely. Now, if you look at switch mode power supplies, everyone says they're bad and evil. And yes, they're noisy. And they're noisy because vendors cut corners on the filtering on the output side of the power supply. Let me let it drop again here a second. The power supply is basically, it rectifies the AC line voltage directly, then runs it through a high-frequency oscillator of 30, 40, 50, 70 hertz, rich in harmonics. Then it rectifies and controls the output on the other side, and then it feeds your rig at whatever lower voltage is being created. Now, all those harmonics get through. Now, good power supply vendors will put some capacitive filters, then they'll put a nice big fat inductor inside their switcher on the output leg in series. And then they'll put an electrolytic and a couple of discs or something similar on the other side. So it's basically a Pi filter. And the cheap switchers either cheap out on one of the components or omit it entirely. So all I'm doing is adding an additional inductor on the output side, and I'm killing the HF frequencies. And the Type 31 does that very well.
And that's good. That's exactly what I had in mind. Exactly. You know, but to be clear, before the introduction of that choke on the DC side, the radiation was, at least when we've measured it off a switcher, it's off the AC side, oddly enough, more than the DC side. And we prove this point, by the way, using a Faraday room and moving the AC and DC side in and out of the Faraday room and taking field measurements. So it was pretty clear as to what was happening. It was rather amazing. The strong field moved with the AC line, which was horrendous. And by the way, extended well through the HF spectrum, which is what we were seeking to suppress, because we had, I'll say, neighbors of our customers, sometimes our customers themselves, who were complaining about the noise either in the AM broadcast band or in the amateur radio bands. pressure wave radio bands. So that's good. So he used a 140, so an inch at 1.4 inch, because you're running a dozen turns of number 20 zip cord. So if I was going to use something heavier, let's say like number 12, I would need to run something on the order of like a 240 or so type of type 31 ferrite in order to accommodate the larger gauge wires. Anybody else?
Yeah, along the same lines, I'm wondering how I've got some LEDs that are old now, and they weren't very noisy in the beginning, but they're noisy now, and I don't have a lot of them. I don't want to just simply replace them, because they'll still be noise. I'd love to make a socket somehow, a socket extender that would have a small toroid inside. The bulbs I have are about 3.5 watts, not a lot of current. But I wonder if anybody knows of ways of filtering the LED bulb right at the bulb socket, easily enough. But that's where I face the problem. I know one of the brands of garage openers has made a bulb that's relatively noise free, but that's a little bit too expensive. So I wonder how people are solving this problem of noisy LEDs.
In all honesty, I have solved it by replacement. I have not found a nice way to calm them down, but I'm sure there are ways. Howie, while I'm thinking of it, I'm noticing you have a yellow, or you or somebody has a yellow Baron's tripod fixture. And I also notice a picture on your website with a some sort of crisscross based for a vertical with some wood that you drove over. Could you, A, verify that you actually have that Baron's fixture for the metal tripod? I mean, yeah, for the metal military pole tripod. And while your yellow one is pretty, my orange one's prettier, but that's just me. And could you describe your little drive over vertical mount?
NJ2BS, repeat.
Be happy to. This is K2EIR. Yes, I still have the Baron's, which I think now is Go Vertical. I think that's his son. I think it was John Baron who started it. Let's look it over. And yes, I have the yellow one. And let me warn you all, because $50 is $50. If you drop this thing on concrete, which I did when I only had it a day or two, it will distort and you will not be able to get your legs, your fittings, your pipes, your tubing into it. I had to go out and buy a muffler pipe device that expands the hole again until I got it round again. So yes, I have that. Now, on to the base that I used with the car. Someone had chucked in the garbage a Chinese room fan and with its base. I got rid of the fan, I took the base, and I got some U-clamps, and I clamped a piece of wood on it, a 2x4, as I recall, and I just drove the rear tire over the 2x4, and it held the fan base, and the diameter of the vertical tube for the fan, I think it was steel, and it was about 1 inch, so I could put various PVC tubing over that, just slide it over, it worked very nicely, and I also found that I think if I put 1 inch PVC or something a little bigger over the steel part from the base, I could then put a 2 inch PVC pipe over the 1 inch PVC pipe, so I got fairly good support on that. Problem, of course, is portability. You got to put this thing back in your car, and if you're not going to take it all apart, you know the U-bolt, it can be a little bit awkward. But it was nice and cheap, and to tell you the truth, you could probably go out and buy a Chinese fan for $15 or so, and it's worth it just for the base. K2EIR.
Yeah, another thing you could do, depending on the kind of load you have in mind, is get yourself a floor flange and a, you know, a 1 or 2 foot, what they call them, nipples, basically a short length of pipe. They have them pre-threaded at Home Depot, and then drop it on a chunk of, let's say, 2x6 or 2x8 or 2x10, 2x12, whatever you want, and just screw it or bolt it through the piece of wood to get that same kind of thing. Oddly enough, it may cost you more than the Chinese thing, but it may also be a little more rugged. But that's great. You know, when you see, you know, what's wonderful about ham radio operators, and I'm going to say another thing about that in a second, is that they tend to, you know, drive by something and say, oh, I could use that for this, or make an antenna, or make a this, or make a that. We see utility in, you know, in a component or set of components associated with something with a totally unrelated function. And that provides some useful things. So let me drop it and say something. So I was taking the New Jersey state-sponsored course, FEMA course, for Communications Unit Leader course this week. And as a matter of introduction, right in the middle of the course, we were talking, the instructor was talking about some of the opportunities for amateur radio operators to participate in a communications unit on an operation. And the state instructor said, understand something, folks. If, you know, said one time my dispatch told me that they had no radio coverage in this particular area, and one of my guys went out, stood outside the dispatch center, and he said, there's a weird red light coming from across the parking lot, and it's blinking, and it's about maybe 8 or 10 feet in the air, and it's just blinking, and our radios don't work. It's very creepy. It was almost like it was an alien experience. So he said, well, throw a light on it and see what you got. And so he threw a light on it and realized that the top of the tower had folded over. 180-foot tower was essentially 10 feet off the ground. The top part was, anyway. And that was the beacon light from the top. And with it went not just the county dispatch, but went an amateur radio repeater. This happened in the middle of the night. Before on, an amateur radio group who worked with the OEM was on site, relocated the repeater and had it up before dawn, and they also were working to restore dispatch for the county as well, and had achieved that by another means. But the bottom line is, hams are very resourceful, and they don't worry about contracts and this and that and the other thing. They just get it done. They found a site that had another antenna and coax, and they just relocated the repeater there by just driving over, pulling the repeater out of the building, and moving it to another building. So, anyway, that's the object lesson of the story, that we are resourceful critters and see some rather amazing things. Anybody have anything else on Howie's little antenna mounts and such?
W2SE.
Go right ahead, Bruce.
Okay, most of the drive-on antenna mounts I've seen are mostly for vertical antennas to provide a post. Some will support freestanding antennas. Others are just there to support pipes, which are then guide when you get up, you know, higher up. But most of them consist of some kind of a horizontal plate, be it wood, be it steel. Charlie's got a very good one. It's made of steel, but it's quite heavy. And you drive over it with your car tire, and then you got to go to the vertical plane. And what the good ones do is they take a piece of steel pipe and they weld it to a steel plate that's bolted to your horizontal piece, whether it's a steel piece or whether it's a piece of wood, like a 2x4, 2x6, 2x8 would be probably something good, or something bolted to a nice piece of 1-inch ply that you drive over would be good. Put a metal steel plate on there, or you could put a pipe flange on there and screw on a piece of pipe. But most people will weld the steel pipe to the flat plate that's, you know, on the ground, or kind of on the ground. And then they'll put a 45-degree triangle of steel between the plate on the ground and the pipe going up to stiffen it so that the pipe doesn't wobble in any kind of direction. And some people will stiffen it in two directions. And then they just go from there, and they usually slide pipes inside, or they can extend slide pipes over. There's a lot of variations. There's a ton of these things on the web. You just look around and you'll find them pretty quick. W2SE.
Okay, so let me describe mine, because I don't have a drive-over one. I have a variant on that beam using a 3/8, using a 2-inch receiver, hitch receiver. So basically, mine is very much like you described, and that's got that reinforcement. So it slides in, it pins, and I can bolt it I don't have to just use a wobbly pin. And then it's got a vertical pipe that's been welded with a diagonal strut that's also been welded between the vertical and the horizontal, so that way it doesn't wobble excessively. And it's only, I don't know, 4 or 5 feet high, so you can drive around with the thing and still get into parking garages and the like. What I did was, that piece of steel that's, I guess, 5 feet, or 5 feet long and essentially 6 feet off the ground, has two holes in it. A hole at the bottom accommodates a stainless steel, a hardened bolt and some washers, and that doesn't move, and I use a nylock on the bottom to provide a pivot point for a military pole that's sistered up next to the other pole. It's on the outside of the vertical pole, so to the rear. Then I have a second one that, again, acts as a pin to hold it, and I put a cotter pin through that bolt just to hold it in place so that it doesn't fall out. But I also can run a nylock and some washers on that as well. So what I do is I pull the top pin, tilt over the military poles, put as many military poles as I dare in there, and I raise my antenna up by just walking it up. I have put vertical omni antennas up there. I have put halos up there. Let me drop it. I have also put as I said, halo antennas, vertical antennas, any all manner of things. But oddly enough, one of the most common antennas other than a VHF, UHF vertical that I put up on there is, surprise, surprise, a dipole. Often a fan dipole for multiple bands. Either like a 40-20-10 or the like. Sometimes a 40-20. That's typical. And it's god-awful simple, and I can walk up a 2 meter or 2 meter 440 omni and the feed point of a dipole up by myself 36 feet, no problem. It's a little wobbly, and I do use metal poles, but it does work, and